Okay, I'm Tamara and I'm an addict.
Hi, Tamara.
Yeah, I used to do the tea commitment here, and I've just finished my yearly commitment, and sort of week in, week out, I've seen people do this. And I thought, that's it, I'm never doing this. It's always really frightening. The meetings are huge. And I actually thought I'd got out of doing it. And I got asked yesterday. I've just come up to a year, so I'm technically, I'm a year tomorrow. And I was quite pleased with myself that I'd got out of doing it. And when I was asked yesterday, I can't really say no to doing service, so I'm just going to get on with it. Very nervous, so hopefully that will go. I actually came into these rooms 14 months ago, and speakers meeting was my first meeting. And you know, my partner brought me in, who's also in recovery. And I didn't know what I thought. I'd got to a place with my using that was very dark. You know, I was broken. But I didn't know if Narcotics Anonymous was the right place for me, you know. In my eyes, you know, I wasn't a street junkie. You know, I'd been working, I had quite a good job. I lived in a nice flat. I sort of had surrounded myself by nice, shiny things that I'd paid for with the money that I'd earned. You know, on paper, my life looked quite good. Anyone that kind of saw me on a superficial level would have sort of not really known that I had a problem with drugs. I was quite controlled in a lot of my using. But something had happened. You know, I'd reached a rock bottom. I try not to be emotional, actually, but yeah, something had died. Something had died inside of me, and I didn't know where to turn, and I couldn't live life on life's terms, and I needed to take a drug every single day just to sort of cope with who I was. I didn't like who I was. So I came to this meeting, and I sat and I listened, and I was furious. When I came out of the meeting, I kind of identified with so much that I knew that my using was kind of screwed forever. And I remember going home, lighting a spliff, and just angry that I'd been sort of caught out. There was no going back. And I kept coming back. I did actually relapse at 2 months, and I think I needed to relapse to know that I couldn't go back out there and use successfully. I'm quite amazed that I've made it to a year. You know, there's nothing more. I came into this and I was ready to do whatever it took, you know, and I was really lucky that I found my sponsor at my first meeting. And, you know, when I sort of struggled with the concept of a higher power, there's plenty of things that have happened in my life that I've realized that my higher power is working. I'm still with that sponsor, and she's been very important to me and in my recovery, and she's been there for me and showed me unconditional love. So I kept coming to meetings. You know, my sponsor said to me in the early days, every time you want to use tomorrow, pick up the phone. And that's what I did. I phoned my sponsor. I kept coming to meetings. I took service commitments. You know, a lot of the commitments I took up, I couldn't actually follow through. And I think this speaker's meeting was probably the only one that I did actually complete for a year. And there's plenty of times I didn't want to come to these meetings. You know, it's quite a full-on meeting doing the tea here. And, you know, there's plenty of times I just haven't been in the mood to sit behind there and smile. And, you know, I've had a face like a slapped arse. But I've shown up. And, you know, the good thing about this program is, you know, I've been allowed to be sad, and I've been carried at times when it's been really difficult. I was teachable and willing. You know, if I knew what had best for me, I wouldn't have ended up in a situation that I ended up in. And I followed my sponsor's advice, and it's the best thing I've ever done, and it's the hardest thing I've ever done. You know, my life has changed so much in the space of a year. You know, when I came into these rooms, I'd been separated from my partner, my husband, for 3 years. He was also an addict. He's in recovery. You know, I got to the point with my work that I pretty much made myself so unemployable that, you know, I couldn't go back to the career that I had for 10 years. I'd isolated myself to a point with all my friends because I was just a nightmare. You know, in the space of a year, you know, I'm back with my partner, you know, which is just wonderful. You know, I'm sort of 2 months pregnant, God willing, you know, everything will be okay. And my life has just changed beyond recognition, and I couldn't have kind of wished for what's happened, and it's happened. And I believe that God only gives you what you can handle, but it's been difficult, you know, having this program, you know, just where I am at the moment, so much, you know, as an addict, I don't like change, and a lot of change has happened to me. And I don't know how people cope on the outside without this program as a practical strategy for dealing with life and taking a step back and, you know, having a higher power and having faith and handing stuff over. You know, I really need that at the moment. I'm so grateful for what I've got in my life, but sometimes it can seem quite overwhelming. And there's nothing more beautiful than seeing a newcomer come into these rooms and, you know, they have reached their rock bottom and they are willing, they're open to suggestion, and they share honestly, they're not worried about what they're saying, they just want this so much. And, you know, and I've seen lots of people in the last year that have come into this room that just aren't ready. And it breaks my heart because, you know, they're going to go back out there and they're going to use again. And you think, how much pain does one person have to take before they're ready, you know? So I'm just going to kind of a little bit about kind of where I came from. You know, I was born into a dysfunctional family. My mum was addicted to sort of downers, cannabis, and Valium, and my dad was had his own addiction, sex addiction, gambling. Now I know I was born an addict, but for many years, because of the sort of dysfunctional structure that I grew up in, I blamed a lot of my using. Just kind of on, you know, learned experience and being around other addicts. But, you know, I know that I've got these genes now. I think I was born on a wave of self-will. You know, whatever my parents, my mum told me as a child, I knew better. I always felt different, you know, different and special. I heard that a lot. But I think I spent so much of my childhood making other people think that everything was all right. You know, I expended a lot of energy. And on the surface, I did fit in, and I did seem to get on with life, and I had friends, and I did well at school. And my whole had this feeling inside of me that something wasn't right. And from a very early age, you know, I could identify compulsive and obsessive behavior that just I knew wasn't normal, but I wouldn't dare tell anybody. Kind of fear of being different. I think when you're a kid, you just, you know, being different is probably the worst thing that can possibly happen to you. You know, my upbringing was hard. You know, because of my mum's using, I walked on eggshells a lot of the time. And, you know, my mum, when she was good, and when she was bad, she was terrible. And, you know, I grew up in a time, in the 70s, that, you know, I got knocked around and I got verbally abused, and, you know, it made me tough. It made me very independent. And, you know, I think as addicts, some of the life experiences we have, we get to that point where we're not very good at accepting help. We're so used to sort of coping with our feelings and life on our own that we don't actually let anyone in because we know what is best for us. So I was quite a tough nut as a kid, but, you know, there was also that very vulnerable side to me. You know, I couldn't wait to leave home. When a lot of my friends started experimenting with drugs, I was actually quite a straight kid. I didn't even smoke cigarettes. I think being around my mum, who, you know, had a kind of cannabis and Valium, I found it all so painfully embarrassing, her stumbling around and, you know, and this kind, she was a rageaholic, and that, you know, it just kind of completely put me off drugs, and I promised myself that I'd never pick up a spliff or I'd never do anything like that. You know, 18, I left home and went to university, and everything changed for me. You know, I kind of reinvented myself. I don't know if I ever really liked who I was as a kid. I was one of those kids that spent a lot of time looking in the mirror, that kind of self-obsession, but not actually liking what I saw, you know, and constantly criticizing. And, you know, it was kind of a weird existence. You know, and I kind of reinvented myself when I went to college, and I saw a cool group of people that were taking drugs, and that's who I wanted to be. That's who I want, you know, I wanted to hang around with, that bunch of people. And this is a progressive illness, you know, from picking up my first spliff, you know, to doing my first pill, to my first line of coke, you know. And some people it happens more quickly, and mine happened fairly slowly. But by the age of, you know, 25, you know, I'd met a musician who was a heroin addict, and, you know, I'd sort of tried heroin. And again, it was that kind of peer pressure, you know, sitting at a party and the foils being passed around. And it was something I always said I'd never do, you know. Each time I sort of did a drug, you know, I wouldn't do the next one. And you know, before you know it, I'm kind of, you know, I'm smoking heroin and I'm smoking crack. And with the progression of my disease, all the drugs that I used, whether it was spliff, amphetamine, you know, ecstasy or cocaine, I was really obsessive about it. You know, I must have, especially with amphetamine, I must have taken it like every day for about 4 years until my teeth started falling out. And when I started experimenting with heroin and crack, it kind of scared me, because I knew what I'd been like with other drugs, and the fear was if I ever got addicted to heroin, I would be the worst junkie in the world. You know, I would never get off this stuff. I already had that sort of sneaking suspicion. So I did what I did a lot in my life, which was, you know, major geographicals. I got rid of my friends. You know, I changed my job. I changed my house. I got a new boyfriend. You know, I got a partner that didn't actually do crack or heroin. He did every other sort of recreational party drug, and I thought that was fine. You know, I carried on taking drugs pretty much on a daily basis. And then throughout all of this, I worked, you know, on the outside. You know, my relationship seemed pretty good and pretty strong, but I was, you know, full of insecurity. I was a very neurotic person. All the jobs that I had, you know, I'd start off really good, guns blazing, I'd be overperforming, you know, and then within 18 months, I'd be digging my own grave. You know, I was inconsistent, I wouldn't turn up. It was the same old story. I'd go around blaming other people and not taking responsibility for myself. And, you know, my drugs always interfered with my work. You know, I was wasted most mornings that I went into work. So most drugs stopped working for me. You know, the coke stopped working. I got to a point where I took it and it just didn't do anything for me, and I carried on smoking cannabis. And I always surrounded myself by people who are a lot worse than me. And that made me feel better about myself. And over about 10 years, my cannabis problem really escalated. And I didn't think NA was for people like me that smoked cannabis that had a job, but, you know, I was kind of buying chocolate bar sizes and not working out why I'd smoked it in about a week. And, you know, it was seriously out of control. I did a major geographical and I went to South America and I watched the sunrise up over sort of Machu Picchu. And I had a massive breakdown, and I realized that, you know, all I wanted to be doing was back in my hotel room, you know, a towel under the door, using drugs. I started to freelance, you know, the job finished, and from the moment I stopped for about 5 months, I just used from the moment I got up to the moment I went to bed. And I didn't know how to stop. I tried. I went to my mum's. I tried to smoke at weekends. I tried to limit the amount of spliff that I had, you know. And when somebody suggested that I came into these rooms, I just felt embarrassed, because I just thought, you know, you've got to be a class A drug user, you know, you've got to be on the streets to sort of qualify for this fellowship, this program. You know, and I sort of came into the rooms. As I said, I got my sponsor. And I had to wait 90 days before I started my steps, and it kind of crucified me, because everyone around me was starting their steps, and I was hearing all these great things about this 12-step program. And I was really kind of biting at the bit to start. And I realize now why, you know, my sponsor made me wait kind of 90 days before I started. And it's, you know, I'm only on step 4, But step one was really straightforward for me. You know, I am powerless over my use of drugs, and my life had become unmanageable. You know, I wrote pages and pages of why my life had become unmanageable, and I was miserable, you know. And I had reservations at first about, you know, I'd never had a problem with alcohol. And I think had I been younger, I probably would have gone back out there and seen that I could have, you know, tried to drink socially. But I was at an age with my life where all my friends had settled down, you know, were having kids, getting on with their lives, and I was kind of heading towards 40, and nothing happened for me, and I don't have the time to go out there and see if I can drink socially. You know, for what I get out of this program, it's a small sacrifice, and I don't miss it. You know, and when I first came, I used to say, I can't drink, I don't drink, I don't want to drink. You know, step two was, we came to believe that a power greater than ourselves would restore us to sanity. You know, and putting the drugs down, I realized all these character defects came up, and it was why I used drugs in the first place, why I had to be constantly numbed. You know, I just couldn't deal with life. And repeating the same behavior is insanity, expecting different results. You know, and step three, my concept of a higher power. I can't do this on my own, you know, I need to have faith, I need to hand stuff over. And I really struggled between sort of actually taking action in my life, because I just thought it was a cop-out, you know, every time something comes along, it's like, oh, just hand it over. And I now know the difference with areas in my life where I can take action, and at times when I do need to hand over. You know, it's a personal thing, recovery, and I've got so much out of this program. I was a rageaholic before I came into this program. I couldn't, you know, when I came in, all I wanted to do was be freed from my compulsion to use drugs, obsessive compulsive, you know, as soon as you've taken your first one, you're thinking about taking your second one, and, you know, on and on. And just to have a better control over my emotions. I thought that's the only problems I had. I didn't think I was an addict, you know. My compulsion went really quickly, and then, you know, I know that I'm an addict. You know, my thinking and my behavior. There was a really good reading in Just for Today, which was, when you're working this program and you're at peace with yourself, you know, you've got a lot of patience and tolerance. And when you're off center, you know, you don't have that, you know. And I become judgmental really quickly. And so much has happened in my life in the last week, last month, that recovery's taken a back seat, you know, with the moving and pregnancy, and I've realized that I'll become mad very quickly, and I'm trying to control everything around me, and it's not a good place. You know, it's a hard place to be, it's a painful place to be. And what happens is, you know, my higher power starts to be somebody else, and when your higher power is another person, you're doomed, because people are not perfect and they're going to let you down, and it happens so insidiously, you know, that it's just, you know, I need to kind of, I get to a point sometimes in my recovery which becomes very painful, and I'm ready to recommit, and I surrender, and I do the things that is suggested, and I've always, you know, have my sponsor at the end of the phone. You know, I need to get some more service commitments, and that's, you know, and that's me kind of putting my hand up, and I've just got to get on with it. But, you know, it was a kind of a pleasure to do this. I hope someone's got something from what I've said. You know, all our stories and all our backgrounds are different. And I really didn't think I qualified for this program, and I did. You know, I am mad. I'm completely mad. And this program keeps me sane. And, you know, I'm going to keep coming back. And for anyone who's new in the rooms, you know, any other life-threatening illness, you know, the odds on for survival. If you are told a few simple things, come to meetings, get a sponsor, do service, work the steps, you're guaranteed, you know, freedom for active addiction, and, you know, you don't have to die from this disease. That's amazing. It's amazing. So, very grateful. Thank you.